Physics World.
Hello and welcome to the Physics World Stories podcast. I'm Andrew Glester and this is Enceladus, the fourth movement from the Moon Symphony from Amanda Lee Falkenberg. The Moon Symphony is an orchestral trip through the science and stories of the moons of our solar system. Taking listeners on a tour of Io, Europa, Titan, Enceladus, Miranda, Ganymede, before turning to our own moon, where you'll also find, resting on the surface, the sheet music of this very symphony. It's all the work of Amanda Lee Falkenberg.
I have been in the musical world since I was 2.5 years old, playing the piano at that age, and pretty much devoted the next 2 decades to really trying to perfect the craft, learn a lot of the literature, piano concertos, competitions at Stedford's, performance degree at the Conservatorium of Music in Adelaide. And that's really the point at which my curiosity for composing started to kick in. And I started composing music for ballet studios, and that I launched a three-part CD on that. And I felt that really the visual world was where I was mostly interested in. And then I got an appointment to be the pianist with Australian Ballet Company. And we were, it was a very busy full-time job. We were doing amazing productions like Carmina Burana, and I was obviously at the piano with the ballerinas on stage, and they were doing these new concepts. And I just honestly wanted nothing more to be involved in that creative process. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to access that dream if I'm sitting here behind this piano. So I resigned, and it was quite a big decision, as you can imagine. There's three full-time pianists and I was one of them. But I really was so curious, Andrew, to see how far I could take my creativity. And so for the next 2 decades, I've really just been writing for films and television, and just doing lots of piano concertos and concert hall music, and just so inspired by the visual landscape. And it was through my piano concerto that I discovered these incredible moons of our outer solar system. And oh my goodness, that was like a lightning bolt moment in my creative career. And I actually had another project I was going to launch into, but then I found these moons and I'm like, nah, I'm putting that project to the side. And I think that is the most exciting and fulfilling project to date.
You discovered them via a piano concerto.
I know, I need to give some context there. I was in between projects, and the advice from John Williams is, you know, when you've got some time on your hand, you know, and you need to you want to compose something, what do you love? And that I thought, well, what do I love? I'm like, I love full moons. So I'm like, I'm just going to write a piano concerto about full moons. So I did. It was called Crossing of the Crescent Moon, and it was more of an abstract piece. Living in Dubai, you're seeing crescent moons everywhere. And anyway, so it was. I had 2 more minutes to write the piano concerto, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to explore some of the sort of the traditional theories behind crescent moons, or just explore some of the literature out there. And I was just doing a couple of hours of research on it, and then all of a sudden I stumbled across this website that said 10 of the weirdest moons of our solar system. And I went, hang on a second, what? What? There's like more moons. I mean, how was I really going to know that there are all these dynamic worlds out there when I was buried in music books and piano, crafting my piano skills? So anyway, I just went, well, these moons need music. And then I'm like, hang on, these moons need emotion. And being a film composer, I'm very aware of the power of music to help amplify them. I kind of felt sorry for them, Andrew. I'm like, here are these amazing worlds trapped in a vacuum of space. Like, I know I could do something for them. I kind of felt sorry for them. It was a really weird experience. And that's when I set about the project. It was literally 7 years ago, October 2017, and set out to put their worlds into music and through the ways I know best. And so I was really drawing upon the aesthetics of their world to start with. But then I started stumbling across all of this incredible science that they've been able to establish from, you know, these incredible missions of Voyager and Pioneer and et cetera, et cetera. And I just realized one day, I'm like, there's no way I could ignore this science. And so I'm like, what if I employed a choir to sing the science so that way it could even give more outreach and relevance and communicate their incredible worlds to a larger audience? Obviously, it compounded my job as composer here, but there was just no way I couldn't include it into the project.
Absolutely. There's the aesthetic translation into music. Can you tell me a bit about that before we move into the science?
Yeah, I guess, like, for me, I'm very visual, and I think that's why I started in the ballet studios. I was looking at how the movement, the port de bras, the whatever, the movement of the dancer, and how I felt music could help them in that exercise, in that training, just because I've just been immersed with the world of music for so many years. And I was so curious about how you could join the forces. Like, it's just a massive collaborative effort, really. And I find it fascinating using the texture of music to try and conjure visuals. And especially being a composer of the orchestra, I mean, you've got so much more access to colour and texture, more so than just a piano per se. And I felt, when I was stumbling across the science, and that's a background I didn't never really come from. And so I'm like, oh my goodness, here's my chance to really delve into the science, a world that I was never exposed to. I was so busy with theatre and music, I just didn't have the bandwidth to put a science topic into my, you know, bag of study. And I'm like, oh my goodness, here's my chance. And it was always they're always sort of seen as separate worlds. And I thought, here's my chance to bridge them together as well. So yes, in terms of like the aesthetics of, you know, probably a good word to introduce to you is programmatic. It's a word that we use in music to help convey the music, a musical narrative or a physical narrative. And Beethoven was amazing at programmatic elements in his music. And so a lot of the musical elements are driven programmatically to help convey the scripts of the science. Ganymede is a moon of Jupiter. It's the biggest moon in our solar system, and there is some phenomenal science happening at this world. And I was fortunate enough to consult with Zhang Zhizha, who is a co-investigator on both the JUICE mission that's heading out there, that's ESA, and of course Europa Clipper mission that's launching in October this year. So I had some pretty heady conversations with him about all the science that they're discovering out there. And I absolutely really wanted to inject that into this moon, just partly because they do have access to knowing what's going on, as opposed to something like Europa. They're still trying to figure it out. I mean, the Galileo mission certainly revealed enormous amount about the oceans, and that's a whole other thing through the magnetometer. But we're talking about Ganymede right now, so I'll stay on track. But there's all sorts of magnetic reconnection that's going on. There's aurora belts that they've discovered as well, because of the fact that it's got its own magnetic field. The charged plasma that's happening at Ganymede, it's all about magnetic field lines, and the protons are excited and they collide and they explode. And in the actual music, Ganymede's a very fun, it starts off quite celebratory, and it really wants to convey all this fun sort of magnetic field light activity. And so you'll hear, like, there's a moment in the bass where I'll do what we call a pizzicato, which is a Bartok technique, where you pull the string away and you'll snap back on the fingerboard, and it gives quite a metallic sound. And of course, that sort of, I'm like, okay, I've got to put that in to sort of, you know, emulate that activity. Also, there's a lot of collision with these protons that are colliding, and so there's like this random bass note that comes from the trombone in the middle of a passage to sort of, yeah, just sort of convey a bit of the chaos. And so there's that kind of thing that I try to draw upon as much as possible to convey, you know, the science, in especially for that particular narrative for Ganymede.
That's amazing. I mean, you've not just gone, I'm just going to write some things about the moons. I'm going to go and talk to the people who literally know the most about these things in order to write about the moons.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a teacher at heart. I have a boutique piano school over here, and I have always, I mean, I feel like many of us are just so curious about life. And I felt that here was an opportunity to, yeah, like you said, just not paint a wallpaper for something that you're interested in. I'm like, no, here's a chance to really explore, like I said, how far can you really take the curious nature of a creative person? And that's why I started, what actually happened, Andrew, is I started researching alone initially, and I turned to my husband at some point. I'm like, hang on a second, like, this website's saying that, and this website's saying that, and there was conflict in what I was researching. And I said to my husband, I'm like, gosh, I need to consult with a moons expert. I mean, I didn't know they were called planetary scientists back then, but anyway, I'm just like, a moon expert. And on some of the YouTube channels I was researching, there was a particular character, I guess you could say, I didn't know who he was back then, but he was like dressed up in like Eskimo gear and talking about this moon Europa that I was about to write for. And I remember taking a screenshot going, I need to find out where this person is and write to him and sort of pick his brain and see if he could sort of lay to rest some of this conflict that I have about what these numbers are and et cetera. So I found out he was from NASA, JPL, in California, and it was one of these black hole emails, you know, the ones that you just kind of you write your little message and you just send it off into the universe and you're pretty sure you're never going to hear back from them. So, and I anyway, I told him my vision. At that point, I hadn't even written a note of music, but I just explained to him the idea of these moons and a concert that I had in mind, and wanted to just see if he was available to chat about the characteristics. And I just didn't think anything of it. And 7 days later, I got a message back from him saying he'd be happy to talk with me. My project sounded interesting to him, and we've been in massive contact over the last 7 years, and he was the one who introduced me to this whole other swag of amazing scientists, lead scientists of the Cassini mission, like Linda Spielker, and Michelle Dougherty, the magnetometer instrument on that Cassini mission, who discovered the geysers at Enceladus. So things just sort of snowballed since then, and I'm so grateful he replied, because I don't think the project would have the gravitas that it does because of the interactions and the collaborative efforts and commitment that I've really wanted to convey, not just with the music, but when we've done outreach and we've done public-facing events. It's just so much more impactful having the scientists and professors share the stage with you to talk the science, and then I'll come in as the musical communicator of how that shows up in the music. It's quite a fun format.
That's better, but I mean, it seems like you know a fair bit about the science these days as well. Have you found it going in as being part of you now, as well as, you know, part of the music?
It was quite a Mount Everest climb. But I was committed because I felt that, you know, like before I would write for stage plays or for feature films, Andrew, I would absolutely invest in the script, the story, and I would not go anywhere near writing music until I felt that I'd penetrated all of the nuances. And so it was just that same approach, but instead of a film script, it was the script of the science that I had to make friends with. And, you know, and I was very old-fashioned, where I would just, like 2 to 3 months, just saturate myself in everything that I could get my hands on and write in pencil and paper. I mean, I've got books like 12 books, I think, in total, cover to cover, just writing everything that I needed to know or felt would be a nugget that I could include. I mean, I couldn't include everything, obviously, so I just sort of hand-pick. So, it was fun. Like, it was just really joyful to be exposed to these incredible minds of these amazing, brilliant people doing mind-blowing missions to our outer solar system. Like, why wouldn't I get excited about that? And so it was just sort of many layers of inspiration, hugely collaborative, and I just felt so privileged to be able to have access to them, and I really wanted to make sure that their time is so limited, and I wanted to be really respectful about that.
Have you got feedback from them, you know, when they've listened to the music? What do they say about it?
Well, oh gosh, that was, yeah. What would happen is I would penetrate the science and then just triple check a few things with them, like, for instance, like Moon Io. I consulted with Ashley Davies from NASA JPL, who's a volcanologist expert, and he's been such a wonderful companion on this journey as well. They all have been. He would come to London Imperial College events that I have given and help convey the science of Moon Io. But what would happen is I'd, you know, again, spend 2 to 3 months researching, then I'd go into the studio. It would be quite a big deal to then convey into a musical landscape. And then after that, actually, Andrew, I would go back into, once I'd finished the music and it felt inevitable, I'd actually then go into the libretto, writing the libretto. That would come actually after I'd composed the music. And I love that part. It was like an ABA. Science started, then the music, then I went back to my science books and had them all laid out in front of me and would sit with my headset and listen to what I'd composed. And then I'd write the phrases that would bridge back to the science, but I had to put a poetic lens on it because this is, you know, sort of theatre after all, and it can't be too sciencey. And I love that part as well. I'm like, I can't really say that word, but I mean, maybe I could sort of, you know, and that's why I had to then put on this poetic hat to sort of soften the science, if you like, so that it's theatrical lens that we're experiencing as opposed to sitting in a science classroom. And that was really fun. So what I would do then is craft my poetry and actually send that to them first. And so for the case of Ashley, I mean, I've been around him at events, at conferences that I've gone to speak at, and he's been sort of introducing me to other scientists at those events. And he'd say, I remember the first time Amanda sent me her poetry for Io, my hairs stood up on the back of my arm and just got goosebumps all over me. And I'm like, well, I hadn't even shared the music with him at that point. So, I mean, so that was sort of and yes, it was just so joyful involving them and interacting at every point, every junction, milestone of the creative process. So I wanted to really, you know, really get across that this is collaborative and this is not, I'm just going to, you know, shut the door and, you know, never speak to you again. I want them to feel invested and a huge, and part of this journey. Like, it's not just, I mean, I feel like a puppet on a string sometimes. I'm just sort of like manipulating this, that and the other, but there is this massive spaceship of people like that are involved in the nuances of why and how this symphony is what it is today.
You said you wanted to bring science and then the arts together, science and music together. I can see the excitement with which you talk about the moons, and I know from knowing scientists and how excited they get about music, that this is just such a great project to do that mixture of science and the arts.
Oh, and, you know, the timing of this question, Andrew, could not be better, because literally just last week, and I'm pleased that we're scheduled this podcast because I have to kept mum about it for so long, but I'm happy to say that this very question you ask is about to be realised on stage at one of the most famous music festivals in the world in Chicago, Ravinia, with one of the most prestigious orchestras, which is Chicago Symphony. And basically Maren Allsop, who also recorded the album in London back in 2022, she got to experience the scientists during the recording session, Andrew, because most of them flew over to be part of that massive milestone. I mean, it's just like a space launch. Like, I'd go and be part of their space launch. They came over to the musical launch. So, I mean, this is just how, you know, virtuous this circle is of science and music and commitment we are to both worlds. So they flew over, including my astronaut friend, Nicole Stott, who I consulted with for the seventh movement. So I literally had this, I mean, I didn't really make a big deal of it at the time, but little did I realise Maren was quite, you know, really enjoyed, she really enjoys projects that are quite multidimensional like this. And so, as it turns out, just before we're about to do a take for one of the movements with the London Symphony Orchestra, she would say, Amanda, do you want to get one of the scientists up to 2 minutes to talk about the moon before they play to give them some inspiration? So there they were on the podium, standing in front of, you know, the London Symphony Orchestra to explain some of the characteristics of the moon they're about to play. And the joy and the curiosity and we've got it all on camera, and the feedback we also received was just so delightful, that they genuinely, the musicians genuinely were quite awestruck by, you know, having this knowledgeable scientist there to help anchor the situation, provide context. So Maren was sort of witness to just sort of like, I guess you could say, a bit of a test run of how science and music can interact and these worlds can overlap. And so, you know, 2 years down the track, she's got an opportunity, because she's chief curator for the Ravinia Music Festival, and as part of the Breaking Barriers theme this year, the Moon Symphony is going to be centrepiece of that event, played by the Chicago Symphony. It's going to be a suite of the Moon Symphony, so it won't be with choir. It will be just a shortened version, but enough. It's like 22 minutes of music to convey the characteristics of these worlds. And we're having many auxiliary events where I've got an amazing roster of scientists. Zibby Turtle, who's lead scientist of the Dragonfly mission back to Titan, she's going to be involved. Michelle Dougherty, who's basically a magnetometer instrument, found the geysers on Enceladus, she's flying over from the UK to be part of the auxiliary event. Yeah, so we are going to be public-facing audiences in Chicago summer this year, but we've been doing this at Imperial College for a couple events, and one coming up again actually in June this year. And so we've seen the impact from the audience and the students, and I think just the nature of music and science sharing center stage like this, and to, you know, as it was pointed out to me, Zibby Turtle, you know, she said, Amanda, this outreach that you are doing, I mean, this is for these outer solar system explorations. It takes, you know, 7-8 years for these missions to reach the planetary systems to conduct the science. She said the age in which that you're presenting, which is, you know, this KIST age 3 students, it's the perfect age to get them interested, because then they can start aligning their subjects that's going to be, you know, conducive to lending themselves to planetary postdocs, you know, when they need students to help them go through the, you know, the data that these spacecrafts are going to be sending back to Earth. So she's saying that the time span is actually really good for outer solar system planetary missions for what you're trying to inspire in those outreach events. So, yeah, and so this will be the first time, Andrew, that we will have a 15,000 audience capacity we've just been doing private events, and we did one at the Great Hall of Imperial College back in December 2022 to a packed house, I might say, actually. Tickets sold out in 5 hours after they were released to the students. So there was quite an interest in the type of elements that we were going to showcase and roll out. And so I think the combination has so far worked. It'll be interesting to see how it's received in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've got your music being recorded, performed by the LSO and soon to be Chicago as well. What? How does that feel to have your music performed by these, you know, well, world-beating orchestras?
Oh, it is, you know, the power of the vision. You know, people followed a made-up mind. My mind was always made up that I wanted no one but Marin Alsop to conduct this symphony, and I just would never let that not be part of the vision, no matter what, you know, COVID and sort of other events, like her diary wasn't lining up with LSO. It was like looking for months for a while that she was not going to be conducting. And so, but, you know, when the email did come through, it came through with COVID because her schedule was completely wiped out, as you can imagine. So she came back into the project. We had to set new dates. She was back on, and I mean, that was just such a dreamy part of the project to have her leading our space mission, if you like. But yes, I mean, I've been living with electronic score for, at that point, 5 years. And then to have the life breathed in it from the LSO players back in May 2022 was. And then to have the scientists, though, sitting either side of me, you know, here I was with my. I wanted them to have that experience. Showing in the musical score, Marin right in front of us, and I would point to where we were at that moment as it was being recorded. I mean, I knew that they would not know necessarily what was going on, but you know what, Andrew? It was almost like a payback time because they were sending their project, their science research page papers, and I wanted them to. I'm like, send it to me. And, of course, I'd read them, and, you know, that was quite heady. It was pretty heady, the formulas and all the data and but I would dutifully read them and but yeah, my eyes would glaze over a fair bit, and there was this one part of their research paper which is called plain English summary. That was always my favorite part because I'm like, okay, I get that. Reading further though, but it was just fun to be around their minds and not really knowing, and that's why I wanted to be seated right in the middle of them, have the score, because I'm like, this surely must feel like how I've felt when I look at their formulas and I'm like, oh gosh. But that's where the respect kind of settles in, and you're just so committed to each other's worlds from that perspective. You just want to try and get as close as you can. Well, at least that's what I've tried to do with the symphony. And so there we were sitting side by side and then having this music brought to life. It was just magical. And yet, you know, that was just a recording, Andrew. I am yet to experience for the first time a live performance. So I can't even answer that question right now, if the truth be told, because it's going to be happening on the 26th of July this year. So, but to end that first rehearsal, we're going to have live plasma screens. They've got plasma screens all over the lawns, and it will be in the pavilion. And so I'm currently just finessing some videos that will accompany the music, which will be, so it'll be a very space immersed experience, hopefully, for the audience. And then, yeah, to hear the live music performed by Chicago Symphony, Marin conducting, and we are going to be given a 10-minute intro on stage, myself, Nicole Stott, the astronaut, and very likely NASA scientist as well, to talk about the mission. To give some context to the audience. Yeah, and I think just setting the stage of why we've done what we have, I think Marin is very much on a mission to make sure that the audience are really clear about just how much science and investment, both the science and the musical world, have come together for what they're about to experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So Nicole Stott is, of course, the first artist in space, right?
Yeah, she did a spacewalk to fix a Canadian robotic arm. Can you imagine? And obviously, you know, at one point her mother and her husband said to her, you know, when she was tethered, she was like the furthest human from our planet Earth. I mean, it was just like compelling what she's done. But, you know, these astronauts, you know, the authority of astronauts, their aura, like being around an astronaut, and people were absolutely, literally awestruck around them, and for obvious reasons. So to have her, I mean, she's just been a huge supporter of this creative process. And so it's going to be so wonderful to have her. She's just, yeah, been on this journey with me through all shades of the rainbow. And yeah, I mean, I was even writing to her yesterday saying, oh, I'm putting the mood board together for Earth Moon, and I can barely hold it together thinking about, you know, the emotional impact that we really want to make for Earthrise and for people to have this emotional reaction to the music. And Nicole's story about the interconnectivity of seeing our Earth from space, that's the seventh movement's message. So the first six moons are basically the scientific data told from the stories of space probes. The seventh movement is the emotional data experienced through the hearts of astronauts. Scientists and an astronaut involved in this mission is really important.
You've got these 12 books of notes, right? What can you tell me some of the things that sprung out at you?
I've got examples, right? So when I'd be sitting, I'd record my Zoom sessions with, like, as I was saying, like before, with Zhang Zhijia, from Michigan University in Ann Arbor. And I mean, we had like almost an hour solid Skype. In fact, I think we had two Zoom calls with him, and I had to record both of them. And so what I would do, Andrew, right, so I'd listen, I'd play back our conversation and write down everything that he was telling me about the moon. And so he was saying things, he was talking about the alpha wings, that the magnetic sphere of Ganymede is very different than other planetary bodies because it's encased in Jupiter's enormous magnetosphere. And so therefore the shape of Ganymede's magnetosphere is a very different shape than others. It forms what they call alpha wings. And so I'm like, stop, describe what alpha wings are. And of course we had to go into the science, and it was, and anyway, so he talked to me about that, and he's actually done diagrams. And so it would be a very literally a hands-on process. I mean, I'd work with pencils and highlighters, and I would just keep writing it out until I started to understand it and come at it. Because remember, I had to sort of then turn it all around and then come at it through a poetic lens. So it just felt really important that I just rolled my sleeves up and just got used to trying to learn the language of this science and understand. I mean, I didn't even, you know, I had to learn about magnetic field lines breaking apart, then, you know, breaking back together. And there's also aurora belts at Ganymede, which fascinated me. So anything that Zhang Zhi would explain to me, I just go, right, that's got to go in the symphony. Like, let's talk about this. Or what else is another? Oh, chorus waves. Yes, chorus waves at Ganymede are a million times stronger than they are at Jupiter. And it's just a recent discovery that's come through. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like a word like chorus waves that straddles science and music, like that was a no-brainer. That had to go into the score. And so, I mean, for that moment, I mean, I give a big timpani solo to sort of, which is the most powerful instrument of an orchestra, to convey the drama of this chorus wave scientific phenomenon that they've recently discovered. So it's just sort of, yeah, it was just completely, yeah, it was really head up, like head and hands on. And yeah, it was, I loved it. I mean, every chapter of this process, learning the science, the research, it's just been so joyful and such an exhilarating journey. And I think that's where I really wanted to hope that the music would also convey all of those ingredients, those emotional ingredients of joy, curiosity, respect and commitment and just wanting to have a good time hanging out with science and music.
Did you write Ganymede first? Did you write Io first? How did that work?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Okay, I actually started writing Europa first. Because that was the science that was coming up the most. That's the biggest, you know, this is NASA's multi-billion dollar mission right now, about to launch in October this year. So that was obviously coming up more in my investigation. So I'm like, but I didn't even know at the time I'd selected these moons that Io, that they were planning this spacecraft launch. And when I did discover it, I turned to my husband, I'm like, oh my goodness, they're sending a spacecraft out to Europa. I'm like, we need a concert to have for that moment. I mean, I hadn't even written any music at that point, but I'm like, wow, we need, you know, I mean, I think that the exciting thing about having a science-based symphony is that you're reaching a demographic that perhaps you wouldn't otherwise be able to target, and vice versa. So anyway, so I just started writing for Europa purely because of, from that perspective. But and then the next sequence was I went to Enceladus, then I went to Titan, Miranda. I went to Io then, because I went to NASA JPL and presented at the Cassini mission at the Von Karman Auditorium. That was amazing. Had a 20-minute presentation to all these PI scientists. It was quite an experience, but that was when I was able to have, like, in situ conversations with the volcanologist expert. And also Linda Spilker, I was able to sit down with her and talk about how they found the plumes at the geysers at Enceladus. And that was absolutely phenomenal to be there in person and just, oh yeah, it was pretty exciting. So then I came back to Dubai and then started composing for Io, which was quite challenging actually. Oh my God. I mean, we are talking about the most explosive, volcanic, powerful moon in our solar system. Like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I was quite intimidated, we could say that. And then so I just sort of got down with it and got on with it and did my research. And then it was time to go in and do the music. And after I'd finished composing, it was actually my husband who said, hey, this sounds like a first movement to me. Consider putting this as your first movement. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I think I will. But the other side to this coin, this other decision, is that the cool thing about programming Io first is that it sets the stage for runaway tidal heating, which is a concept about the new Goldilocks zone, which is why they scientists believe that they could find microbial life in the ocean of Europa because of the tidal heating at its core and the interaction of salt and ocean water, and the new Goldilocks zone is basically the this idea. So I felt that having Io first, not only do we begin with a blast, we also can then convey these really important concepts moving out in, you know, as we move out into the other stories of the other moons.
Brilliant. It is a wonderful, wonderful start. And it just, you know, continues to be brilliant throughout. Do listeners get in touch with you?
They do. I've got some such incredible, I've been actually really blown away by how, so we've done a lot of outreach events in London, private, like test beds, just testing audiences out on the concepts. And this was even before the recording was made. And the feedback, the reaction that I get, and often I've shared the stage with a scientist, like I did an event with Robert Pappalardo, and the audience are just, you know, dazzled by having the presence of a scientist that, you know, potentially could, a mission that could revolutionise science again in, you know, by finding microbial life in our solar system. You know, it's just, and then to have music as a soundtrack to these science, what I call fact adventures of our outer solar system. There's something, there's just an X factor about, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but, you know, the sort of feedback that I get from audiences is life-changing. Amanda, I'm like, you know, my God, their jaws are just, I don't know. I mean, you want to be happy with your composition, but you are never sure how an audience will react or respond. So I've just been really so grateful that it's resonated, and, you know, and it's not just about, it's not about the ego of an artist. We've got a planetary mission here. Like, we want to inspire humanity so that, you know, good things can happen here on planet Earth, and, you know, paradigm shifts and perspective shifts from seeing our planet, the only planet that supports life in our solar system. There's just these big overarching themes that just go beyond the ego of the artist with this. So I have no problem saying that, you know, it's been really well received. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. You know, that people then hopefully will be inspired to do great things themselves. And yeah, so it's just sort of that sort of virtuous circle, and that we really want to get across. And it'll be interesting to see what the audience reaction in Chicago will be.
So sorry, I can't be there. What I love about it personally, because, you know, I've had a love of science and music for, well, several decades, and I've experienced quite a few science music crossovers, and I think sometimes when the science and music crossover happens, the science leaks too much into the composition of the music, and it becomes a bit, you know, people lean too much on the electronic, they go a bit beepy boppy. It's less about composing something wonderful to listen to, and it's more about exploring the composition using the music, which it has its place, don't get me wrong, it totally has its place. But what you have created is something which is beautiful to listen to, and beautiful in its creation, in liaison with the science, if you see what I mean.
Thank you so much. And I think, I, leaning on my background as a film composer, I think that is where, because motion, that's all that you really, I think that's the biggest thing you've got to go after, as to recognise where in a story, you know, the emotional landscape. And the power of music when you team it up with emotion to draw people, like to manipulate emotions, basically. I mean, as as crude as it sounds, but, you know, if you want to inspire, you know, positivity and call to action, that's a great way to do it, through the emotional landscape. And so I felt I was somewhat in a bit of a fortunate position to draw upon my years as a film composer, with my own passions for these incredible worlds. And then, you know, long came the scientist element to it all, which I was absolutely, you know, besotted with, just because it was such a world that I hadn't been exposed to and I wanted to, and I knew I I knew I could if I had the right team around me. I knew I could perhaps do something. And I think the other thing that my husband points out is that the thing about your symphony, Amanda, he says, you know, you can just listen to it alone. You don't have to even think about what the science is. But if you want to go under the hood, I mean, that's what my whole, I'm creating a lunar outreach program that's going to be in conjunction with this symphony. And actually Imperial College are helping me reach the masses with this lunar basics in Ackerman, learning under new artistic regimes. So it's a whole new program of showing how music can inform the science and science can inform, you know, so that science inform music. It's just really just a different paradigm in educational approach. So this is what we're going to be sort of rolling out in Chicago as well. We're going to be rolling out in Imperial College. We have been rolling it out to really great reaction as well. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of science embedded in this, which I love, I have to say. And just so finding all these parallels has been really a great use of my time trying to make the connection so students can just metabolize it easier by being backed with lyrics and music and emotion, and hopefully it'll penetrate better.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. There's one other thing I wanted to ask you about, which is your music being on the moon.
Oh, well, okay. So it's been a long time coming. That idea was dreamt up, oh, goodness me, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago. Okay, so Nicole Stott, it's a husband, Chris Stott, Lone Star, obviously, he's just had a successful launch, moon launch, and the payload on that was some data that was being offered to some creative artists, and he approached me about having the conductor score of the Moon Symphony on the payload. So yes, the digital copy of the Moon Symphony is sitting on the moon right now, which is kind of fun. But I think, Andrew, again, beyond fun, I've said to Nicole, like when she's talking to the audience in Chicago, you know, it might be a really helpful thing to just state that fact. Actually, the music you're hearing tonight is actually on the moon right now, because the whole concept of the seventh movement is to transport humanity onto the surface of our moon, looking down onto our planet, and it's all about perspective shifts and the overview effect. And so I just think if they can make that connection that physically they're experiencing the music, but hang on, we're getting transported through the vibrations of music, but actually the score is up there anyway. I just think it's a really nice sort of overlap.
It's awesome.
And that just happened very recently, actually, but it's been a long time coming because it got delayed. It was meant to be launched back in December, and you know, SpaceX has, you know, lots of things going on right now. So, but that was really fun that finally that happened. Yeah, like I said, a long time coming, but it's a pretty cool idea to know that it's up on the moon. And I'm putting together the video that's going to accompany that seventh movement right now. And there are some stunning, which we've got it right in front of me, Andrew, because I'm working on it and I'm not talking to you. there are some stunning images that I'm putting from the lunar reconnaissance orbiter, this act. And so the audience will just begin with the music and just see these glorious videos coming back from that, which I think will help sort of set the mood for that. For that moon, and set the stage from the science space energy of the others to this more reflective experience.
Amanda Lee Falkenberg's The Moon's Symphony is recorded by the London Symphony Orchestra and is available on Signum Records. I'd like to thank Signum for allowing us to play clips of that recording on the podcast. And I'd like to thank Amanda for taking the time out to talk to me as she prepares for that concert in Chicago. We'll be back next month with something else from this wonderful world of physics, and I'd like to thank you very much for listening.
Physics World.